Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today's conversation, very happy to be joined here in our 1285 podcast studio in New York by Patricia Zobel of Guggenheim Partners. Some quick background on Patricia. Patricia Zobel joined Guggenheim Partners in 2024 as head of their macroeconomic research and market strategy group. Patricia leads a team that informs the firm's macroeconomic and asset allocation views. Patricia has extensive experience in fixed income markets and monetary policy. As an executive at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Patricia served as deputy manager and manager pro tem of the Federal Reserve's System Open Market Account Securities Portfolio, leading the implementation of U.S. monetary policy as directed by the FOMC and providing insight on global financial markets for the committee. With that, Patricia, thank you very much for joining us today here in studio. It's great to have you at the table and very much looking forward to hearing your thinking on a range of topics which we'll cover.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dan. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. So a lot to cover during our time together today, Patricia, perhaps beginning big picture with the U.S. economy. Curious to hear about your expectations for the economy's trajectory. I know there's been a lot of discussion, debate over a soft landing, no landing, or perhaps something else. So curious to hear how you think the economy might evolve from here.
Well, so there certainly has been a string of stronger data recently, and that includes the retail sales report that was just released this morning. But even with some pretty strong data, we see moderating growth ahead, so we would be more in the soft landing camp. The U.S. economy does have some momentum. Overall, consumers are in good shape. Household wealth is elevated, and real income gains have been solid. September's labor market report to us suggested that employment has returned to firmer footing, which should continue to support spending and income. Corporate profitability in aggregate has also been robust, and this should continue to support investment as well. But even with these supportive factors, we expect growth to slow over time. Two things that have been underpinning strong growth are now fading. The first is immigration, which fueled employment growth in 2023, but is now down quite sharply. This should slow labor force growth over time. The second is fiscal spending. Although deficits are still quite high, the growth impulse from fiscal spending has been declining. And finally, I think it's important to remember that policy rates are still at restrictive levels, and that's damping demand in some areas of the economy. In particular, small businesses and lower-income consumers are still pinched by elevated interest rates and inflation. And so overall, we expect growth to moderate from here. We're also attentive to potential downside risk to our forecast. It's an environment with significant uncertainty, including from the U.S. election and escalating tensions abroad. So we're focused on moderating growth and monitoring downside risks.
So, Patricia, given your experience background at the Fed, of course, do want to hear your thoughts when it comes to the course ahead for monetary policy as we're recording here on October 17th, mindful of the 50 basis point cut commenced by the Fed back at the September meeting. I'm curious to hear about your expectations for policy rate cuts through the balance of 24 and even looking ahead into 2025.
Yeah, it's a good question right now. Our baseline expectation is for two more cuts this year, and we've penciled in four cuts for 2025. The FOMC has really been navigating through an uncertain environment. But, you know, with inflation on a more convincing path to 2%, there was little reason to keep rates so high. And so they eased by 50 basis points at the September meeting, as you noted. I thought the chair did an effective job at communicating the move as a recalibration of monetary policy rather than a response to a weak outlook. And this, move and communication bolstered confidence among market participants that the FOMC will act as needed, and I think reduced perceived downside risks to the economic outlook. You know, from here, though, we expect a more moderate pace of easing ahead unless there's a softening in the labor market or a shock that hits the economy that affects the outlook. FOMC participants have come out pretty uniformly since the meeting in favor of a gradual approach to easing from here, in particular after, as we talked about, the slate of stronger data since the meeting. While the data haven't really changed our modal call of two cuts, we did lower the downside risk to our forecasts, and we now see the risks as pretty balanced between either one or three cuts as a counterpoint to our modal forecast of two cuts. Looking past 2024, our rate outlook becomes a little less certain. You know, the economy is experiencing conditions that make the right policy setting hard to determine. Things like large fiscal deficits, buoyant markets, may augur for a higher terminal rate this easing cycle than even the committee's long-run Fed funds dot. And the FOMC probably will want to move pretty gradually to see how policy is affecting the economy as they move next year, and that will augur for slower rate cuts. And that's unless the outlook weakens. We think that what the September rate cut showed was that in response to a weaker economy, the FOMC is going to be pretty responsive.
Now, outside of the economy, conditions there as well as the Fed, top of mind for many at the moment. We're roughly 2-3 weeks out from the upcoming U.S. election, very tight as we're heading into the final days. When you think about certain outcome scenarios, Patricia, of the U.S. election, how might those influence your macro and market outlook from here?
Well, the election is certainly an important factor affecting the U.S. outlook. The election itself is a source of uncertainty for markets and the economy. You know, and with polls showing a very tight race, you could, you know, expect some significant price swings around the election. And election uncertainty also makes businesses more cautious, and we're seeing signs of that in business surveys. So there may be a near-term impact on growth from the election itself. But it's post-election policies that, for us, is more impactful to our 2025 and 2026 outlook. It's difficult now to estimate the effects given the still evolving proposals and uncertainty about election outcomes. And so we haven't baked anything in for next year. To us, though, tariff policies are something that we're looking at closely, because they're likely to have the largest near-term impact to growth and inflation. Tariffs are widely discussed as increasing prices, but they can also slow growth by reducing consumer income and corporate profits and disrupting supply chains. A lot depends on the details of the policy measures, but you know, some of the proposals have a pretty broad implementation of tariffs, and we think that could be quite impactful to growth if those are in fact achieved. Stricter immigration policies could also slow growth more than we're already anticipating. As I noted earlier, the sharp surge in immigration that occurred in 2023 has already faded. Border crossings are actually down over 70% from their peak in 2023. And this is going to slow labor force growth over time. And if a further reduction in immigration could weigh on growth even more than, you know, we're expecting this moderating growth. Finally, I think new tax cuts or credits have more clearly stimulative effects, of course. But the policies that either candidate might be able to achieve are likely to be moderated by the reality of already high deficits and potential opposition in Congress. So there's a lot of uncertainty in both the policies that will be implemented and their impacts next year. We're going to be adjusting our outlook as the environment becomes more clear, and we're preparing ourselves for surprises.
So, Patricia, as you put it very well, there's a fair amount of uncertainty amongst investors in the markets as we're awaiting the outcome of Election Day. As far as how should one think about positioning their portfolios at the moment, maybe we can now switch over to some asset allocation. Beginning with fixed income, where are you finding opportunity in the asset class at the moment?
Well, so overall, you know, we think it's a good time to be a fixed income investor. All-in yields are still attractive, the Fed is easing, and U.S. growth is still solid. With inflation back near 2%, the real return potential is still pretty high. So still spreads are fairly tight. Overall, corporate health is good, supporting these tighter spreads. But there's a wide dispersion in balance sheet health underlying that. And so we see thoughtful credit selection as really important to mitigating any downside risk. We also like opportunities in less competitive areas like structured products, where we think managers with expertise can pick up good excess yield.
Now, this may be a bit more niche. Real estate coming off of the pandemic, a lot of focus about the trajectory of real estate. You think about commercial, office in particular, though, broadly speaking, where are you finding opportunities within real estate at the moment?
So, of course, it's been a tough couple of years for commercial real estate due to high interest rates and pandemic dislocations. You know, lower borrowing rates recently can help commercial property borrowers. Yields have backed up a little bit since the lows of mid-September, but are still down notably from the highs earlier this year. You know, I think the exception is the office segment, which remains challenged by low occupancy rates. Mm-hmm. We continue to see those problems come to the fore and people working through that over time. In terms of opportunities in real estate, we see direct investment in growth areas like infrastructure as pretty attractive, particularly for middle market projects. For managers with experience, they can find opportunities that are less competitive.
Considering investments outside of the U.S., of course, there's a lot happening from a geopolitical standpoint across the world. You think about the Middle East, China. When navigating geopolitical risks, what are you looking out for when considering investing outside of the U.S.?
It's a good question. There has been a real escalation in tensions around the world in recent years. And this is, of course, most difficult for the people in countries directly involved. But from our perspective, it's important to think about how these risks affect our investments. Until recently, conflicts have not had a material impact on U.S. markets, and we primarily invest in U.S. fixed income. In part, this resilience to these tensions abroad reflects the U.S.'s move towards greater energy independence and the limited impact it's had so far on oil prices. However, the potential for conflict has created some volatility in recent weeks. Oil options markets in particular suggest the risks of greater price swings going forward. In most scenarios, you know, oil seems less likely to have sustained price increases given the supply still available in some countries. However, if there are major disruptions to oil transportation routes, or if there is a broader conflict in any of the regions where there are tensions right now, we could see the impact as being much greater. So we're monitoring this as one of the risks to our outlook and to our portfolio.
Well, Patricia, we've covered a lot of ground in a relatively short period of time. Before we close out, is there anything you would like to leave our listeners with or perhaps reinforce?
Well, I just want to say it's been a pleasure to be here. I would say that right now, the U.S. seems well-positioned. Growth is solid and inflation is coming back down closer to 2%. With all-in yield still attractive and the Fed easing, we think it's a pretty good time to be a fixed income investor. Still, it's an environment with a lot of uncertainty, including the election and geopolitical risk, which we've talked about. So we're monitoring that carefully in our portfolio.
Well, Patricia, thank you again for dropping by our New York studio for today's Talking Markets episode here on UBS On Air Market Moves. Would be great to have you back at some point, though. Thank you for joining us and sharing your insights with our listeners.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements statements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.